Hi, I am Takuma Sato. You're listening F1 Weekly.
There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
You want to
keep up the good work, Stephen, and there you have it. There you go.
Hello, this is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. I'm your in-depth correspondent.
Let's go with the qualifying, Steve.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Nasser Hamid, my co-host. This is podcast number 846, August 17th. 2020, Nasser.
Thank you, sir. Pleased to say your favorite driver now has 88 wins, just three more to go, and Bottas gets his kick on lap 66, and Valentino Rossi dodges a rocket at Red Bull Ring. Back to you, the El Matador of podcasting.
Thank you, Nasser. On today's program, this race has been compared to slow motion chess. Max is getting more and more interesting on the radio. Fernando taking the machismo challenge at the Indy 500. And of course, we've got more from Gary Sloan in the pit lane. And we've got Tech Talk with Tim. And he's got some good information on all that crazy stuff happening to the Pink Panther. And I want to remind everybody, we need your contributions to keep this program on the air. Just click on the Support F1 Weekly tab on the front page. You know you want to. Nas, welcome to the studio. How you been?
I'm doing very good, sir, and it's the Spanish Grand Prix review, so nice to know that we have a fully loaded in-flight burrito with Gary Sloan and Tech Talk, and my thanks to these young people for helping us out. How are you doing, sir? You must be excited.
Oh, I am so excited. No points for Renault. Pink Panther continuing to cheat with a reprimand. You gotta love the FIA, you know? And I hate to tell everybody that Renault is always right and everybody else is always wrong, but in this particular situation, I am truly full of motivation. Because really, Renault's complaint is very, very simple and easy to understand. So what happened was Renault saw its cars disqualified from last year's Japanese Grand Prix over a brake bias system that was found to have been breaking the sporting regulations. The FIA said on that basis, they were disqualified and they had to remove the system from the car. Renault is calling for the same kind of penalty to be applied to Racing Point. Renault got it in the bootay, and it should go all the way around fairly. That's their point. Why do they get treated more harshly than the Pink Boys? That's my tip of the week, Nas. Let's just focus on the truth.
Yeah, tip of the week gets tipped over very easily when the issue is brought up of fairness, that two teams are in possession of other teams' data, one gets slap on the wrist and the other gets $100 million fine. And that's what we call coming straight from the firing line, CNN style.
I completely agree. People forget about these previous big penalties for breaking the sporting regulations. And I'm not sure what's going on. We know that the FIA and Ferrari are fairly cozy, but I think it was fair. And I don't want to open that can of worms up again. But the FIA and billionaires with a B seem to be cozy as well. Nas?
Well, you know, what is interesting, again, I'm no expert on these things, technical issues, But what is interesting, they have deemed the car or these parts, in breach of sporting regulation, if not technical regulation, and they will not be allowed to do what they have done this year, next year. So basically, lack of a better word, they have an illegal car. But the car is still entered and still can earn points. So that's what's bothering some people. And these are grown men, smart men, and like you said, billionaires with a capital and bold B. They should find a resolution. What it is, I don't know. But I think it's a little unfair for some teams that these two cars can compete and score points. What the solution is, I don't know. I don't want them to be disqualified because we need more cars and, more action. Maybe the solution is give them half the points of what they score, or only one car can score if both of them are in the points. I don't know. But I would like a resolution, not constant complaining, dragging the beautiful world of Formula One through the Louisiana swamp. You know what I'm talking about?
I do know what you're talking about, and I completely agree. They do need to settle this because it's going to be in the forefront of each Grand Prix. And Renault has a right at each race to file another complaint because that's how the system works. They're just following the rules on how to file a grievance with the FIA. But on the other hand, the FIA need to be a little bit more clear and transparent about how they come up with previous decisions and how it's applied to this decision. Just like in the Supreme Court, we talk about previous cases, how they were adjudicated, and why they were adjudicated that way. So let's clear this up. I want to get it done with, but it's time to get back to racing. And we know Lewis Hamilton is the greatest of them all, and he's going to prove it at every Grand Prix. Amazing, 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 but you got to give it to him. Lewis Hamilton is going to show Bottas how it's done.
Well, it's interesting you say. I was thinking about it, a little bit earlier today. I don't want to use the word plight, but, situations these young drivers find, Bottas, Rubens Barrichello, and many others, Gerhard Berger, all these drivers, they sacrifice anything and everything. They do have very good pedigree, very impressive credentials, junior formulae. Bottas won his GP3 in a very impressive style. Halfway through the season, he was nowhere in Formula Renault. He had a close battle with Ricciardo, which he won for the championship. And then these people get to Formula One. I mean, how many drivers can get into Formula One? And on top of that, get into a all-conquering machine called Mercedes AMG. And then you look at the other car and it says Lewis Hamilton. And that's pretty much when the dream starts to fade away. It's hard to win against. If your teammate is Lewis Hamilton, Alonso, and I was thinking about this. Do you remember when Sebastian Vettel first came into Formula One with Toro Rosso? His teammate was another Sebastian, Sebastian Bode. And look where the two are today. So it's a sad scene, but the only way Bottas can win the championship is two or three. See, now he has double problem. If Lewis has two or three kablamos or somebody takes him out, like Kevin Magnussen or everybody's favorite Romain Grosjean, then he has to deal with Max Verstappen. And if Max Verstappen finishes ahead of Bottas in the championship, that will not be good for Bottas. So he's in a tough spot. I really feel for him. I really do, to be honest with you. But what are you going to do against El Machismo of all time?
Exactly, of all time. I mean, this is it. And we'll be watching this for a number of years, but he is going to just bowl over these records. And we just have to enjoy it and relax and hope Max can do something. But I have to admit, I'm starting to like Max. He's starting to get frustrated on the radio. He's screaming. He's hollering. It's starting to remind me of a world champion that did a lot of that. And it was exciting for me. So we're going to see how this thing develops. But I suspect we're going to get some interesting speeches out of Verstappen. Unless he gets a little more speed, maybe another 6/10. What do you think?
Well, you know, he has won some races. He has as good as a package he can ask for. It's reliable. And this is not a package where he needs to yell and scream or grab a beach chair. And also, this is not a package that is earning him, which was another ridiculous way of doing things, 35 grid penalties when there are 20 slots on the grid. So, you know, he just has to wait. I really think, I know it's not going to happen. They need to get this kid in Mercedes. That's when we're going to have, as Tone Loc would say, that's when body starts slapping or slamming from doing the wild thing. You know what I'm saying?
I could imagine. I'd love to watch that mosh pit.
Yes, that would be fantastic. But shall we talk a little bit about Quali, sir, before we get into the ration, as you call it?
Yeah, I remember Quali. Fun stuff.
Oh, yes. Sharp end of the grid. Nothing changes on race day. Mercedes lock out of the front row for the seventh time in 8 years here in Barcelona. So complete domination in Viva España. Bottas was too close for comfort, but could not prevent Lewis, your new Formula One favorite driver, from his fourth pole of the season and number 92 of his career. The records keep piling for him. First driver in F1 to start 150 races from the front row. Simply mind-boggling and super amazing. Pace of pole sitter was such that this is really bad for this season, because there was a lot of hope that Max will stick it to Lewis, but the pace of pole sitter was such that the third man on the grid, Max, was over 0.7 seconds slower than LCH, and Mercedes has been on pole in Barcelona since 2013. So they were showing their muscles before the hybrid era. And Michael Schumacher has the most pole positions in all, 7 at the Spanish Grand Prix. Seb was no show in Q3. And one website put the transcript on their web page that not a word was said during Q1 and Q2, and Vettel starting next to Daniel Kvyat was not what the doctor ordered. Not surprisingly, Charles Leclerc was in Q3. Gasly made it in, and this kid is doing a pretty decent job. 9 times in a row he has now outqualified his teammate, comrade Kvyat. And if this trend continues, I can see Torpedo being torpedoed by Tsunoda, Yuki Tsunoda from Japan, who is in F2 these days, that he may be at AlphaTauri next season. Both McLarens and Racing Points were in the final shootout, which was very impressive. I'm very happy for McLaren, man. They were out to lunch and some sushi with Honda package. But I'm not going to blame one or the other, but it's good that they're doing well. And I am sure when they change to Mercedes power plant, sorry to say this, the new power will bring them 6th or 7th, 10th, and then maybe they can start finishing in the top 4 or 5, which will be very nice. Any thoughts on Quali, Mr. Rogers?
No, it was the usual affair, let's say. What I'm looking at is where Sebastian Vettel compared to Leclerc is. And I'm worried about Haas, to be honest with you. They had a couple of good seasons that made them look like they were contenders soon. They look like they might make and break the barrier. But they've completely gone backwards. And I don't see Mr. Haas, Gene Haas, sticking with Formula One much longer if this doesn't change. He's a winner. Haas likes to be up front. And I see trouble in the air. I think this team is going to go up for sale pretty soon unless something drastic changes.
Well, you know, they did very well in their first few years. And I don't think, as much as Romain Grosjean complains and gets in other people's way, he was very impressive in the Renault days. I remember getting on a podium here and there. And Kevin Magnussen is a very feisty driver. So I think their package is not very good. Whether it's more to blame on the car or more to blame on the engine, I don't know. But obviously the engine, even in mothership, is not doing very well. But it will be sad to lose. It's the only American team on the grid right now. It's run by a serious businessman, not by a comedy show promoted on Speed TV, if you remember that.
My favorite.
Yes. Now, most impressive at the start, I mean, this was quite a, for me, very impressive, was Lance Stroll. He got his pinky ahead of Bottas, and number two almost got pushed into fourth place by the other Pink Panther. Up ahead, LCH and Max were doing what they do best. It took five laps for Bottas to get ahead of Lance. Your thought on Lance's launch, sir?
It was very impressive. Lance, I mean, I thought Perez, you know, this is his first race back after missing two previous Grand Prix. And I thought he had to prove himself, make sure that Hülkenberg didn't get a job there. And I thought Perez did great during the entire race, but I thought Lance Stroll's start was much better than Perez. It was very impressive for the young man. He's not letting billions of dollars push him down.
That's very true. That's pretty impressive.
It is pretty impressive, and I think he's a good driver. And Papa should be proud.
No, he is a good driver, you know. I mean, you don't win European Formula 3 Championship or the big international karting event in Vegas, which he did. And Max Verstappen and George Russell were also in that race. So he's quick. But obviously he gets a lot of flack for being, you know, member of the Lucky Sperm Club. Good for him. But one thing is for sure, he will win races in a Mercedes.
Very true.
After 16 of 66 laps, Vettel was still not in the points. Sad to see once mighty Seb and his number one finger now only points at his own team, and not in a positive way. But such is life in the fast lane of Formula 1. Lap 22, Max was the first among the top five to pit and change to medium, coming out in third place. Two laps later, LCH was in and had no problem retaining the lead. Bottas was next to pit and top five remained the same. Lance went 28 laps before his pit stop. Perez was in two laps later and so did Seb. Did you like the dicing? Because I really enjoyed the dicing between Lando Norris and Charles Leclerc.
It was great. And it's always clean. Nobody's crashing. And it was excellent. Be honest with you, I mean, that's really all we have in these Grand Prix, especially this one where Lewis Hamilton was gone.
Yeah, you know, people are complaining this was a boring race. I mean, race is not exciting when you know before the race starts who's going to win. And the way these things are, I mean, you already know on Thursday who's going to be on pole, and then Friday morning you know who's going to win. But there is a lot of action going on in the mid-pack, and it was good that they showed a lot of side-by-side racing. So I'm loving Formula One as much as I ever have. How about you, sir?
I'm loving it. I think it's great. Well, the biggest problem is España, Barcelona. They do testing there. All of these drivers have mastered this track, and Lewis Hamilton has mastered it, I think, the best. But it's a tough track for overtaking. We all know that. It's hot. They go down there because there's no rain, not as often as most countries. So I liked it, but now we go to Spa. Much more exciting, much wetter. Much more damp, much more green.
Speaking of hot, a new, you know, sometime when you go, not sometime, almost every time I've gone to a racetrack, you always see somebody wearing a t-shirt saying, top 10 racing drivers excuses, you know. So I think this past Sunday we had a new one. My suit is black and it's getting too hot. Did you like that, sir?
I loved it. I loved every minute of it. I mean, it was back to Hitco or Brembo for me.
And Carbon Industry.
Thank you.
Oh, boy. Now, what was interesting, there was a lot of heavy clouds there. And, you know, they always talk about rain in Spain. And on lap 36, Seb was told rain is coming. And what I was hoping for, this was my big hope for the race, that rain would come maybe 10, 12 laps from the end, just when the top five have passed the point of entry, and then people who are running 5 to 10 could do a Marcus Winkelhock and come in and get the rain tires and then have the top five suffer for almost a lap. But it did not happen. Lap 37, Kimi Raikkonen entered the F1 history books by covering the most race distance in Formula 1. So pretty impressive. And that is in terms of race miles. Charles Leclerc on same lap did a Sev and spun as the engine quit. He was able to restart but retired from the race. I believe he was the only DNF in Spain this year. Lap 42, Max was in for second time. I think one of his pit stops was like 1.9 seconds, which is very, very impressive to change four tires. A lap later, Lance also came in for fresh rubber. Lap 46, Sebastian Vettel, the four-time world champion, appeared in top five, courtesy of only stopping once at this stage of the race. And did you enjoy his back and forth with the race engineer, sir?
How could you not enjoy that? It's so much fun. Brought back those memories of the finger.
Yes, there is no more amore left in that cockpit or in the town of Maranello for Sebastian Vettel now. Now, when Mr. Bottas came in lap 49 for soft tires and came out behind Max, I thought we may have a what you call ration between the two, but apparently the soft went softly on Bottas, and he was not able to make any dent on Mr. Max. At the end of lap 50, LCH was in for second time. And interestingly, he told his team, "Don't give me soft." So, very different strategy, but the result remains the same. And when it was all over, sir, the only good thing for Mr. Bottas was he celebrated 50th podium and fastest lap on the final lap. But that gives him one extra point, but still not enough to put a smile behind the mask. In the post-race interview, he told Martin Brundle, "I don't know what happened at the start, but I think people who are watching the race have a pretty good idea what happened." Finishing third and falling more points behind Max and Lewis. Not good for Valtteri. Max, as usual, playing his normal role, fast and furious. Now, we did not talk about this during the qualifying chit-chat, but the performance difference between him and his teammate, both in quali and race, is the reason team principal and members dance around numero uno. All he needs is a little more zen from his Honda engine, and then we will have a very exciting Grand Prix from start to finish. I like his radio message to the team. When they wanted to keep him out so he does not come out in traffic, his response was simple, saying, "I can easily pass those guys." Talk about confidence on a track where passing is not common or easy. Any thoughts on that, sir?
He's becoming more machismo every day.
I don't know what kind of clauses he has in his contract in terms of performance that will let him trigger, which something Vettel did when he left Red Bull. But I'm a little disappointed. Most likely he will not be the youngest world champion this year, which would have been very nice, you know, youngest race winner, youngest world champion. But I don't want to see this guy go another 3 years without a championship. That would be very, very bad for the sport. What say you?
I agree. Biggest problem is, can Honda make those leaps? Because I think the car is fine. He just needs a little more horsepower. And if Honda could bring that next year, then it's a game changer.
Absolutely, absolutely. If Honda can bring to the show what they brought to Williams and McLaren in the 80s, then the numbers that Lewis is racking up every year and that Michael used to do, this guy will surpass both of them, I think. And now we come to the top of the podium for the fourth time this season. From six races, his 156th podium puts him one ahead of the previous record held by Michael Schumacher. COVID or no COVID, this will be remembered as a historic Hamilton season. He is really on the hammer time. Can't touch this. Hemi haters will say, but he has the best car. And you should see on Facebook and other racing website how people are very strongly opinionated on both sides of the fence, which is fine, but that's the case with every, you know, successful racing driver. But last I checked, Mr. Rogers, Ayrton Senna did not win three championships in an Osella, and Michael Schumacher did not win five in a row in an era. So when all is said and done, where would you put Mr. Hamilton in the annals of the greats of motor racing?
Well, in terms of numbers, he's at the top. I mean, there's no way you can knock that pedestal down. It's not like he's taking steroids or something and we're going to have a Barry Bonds moment. This is all legit and it's impressive. And the other thing is, Mercedes, we're not talking about their recovery from Silverstone. Everybody was looking at one thing only for the first 10 or 20 laps of this race, and that was the tires on the Mercedes. There was no blistering. And when Red Bull saw no blistering, they knew that there was no victory. Because impressive as it is, but they fixed it. They kicked ass. Mercedes is unbelievable. And as long as Lewis Hamilton stays at Mercedes, whether Toto does or not, doesn't mean a thing. I think we've got 2, 3, maybe 4 more championships. Lewis Hamilton will race until he's 40.
No, that's another 3, 4 years, I think. I think he's, what, 34, 35 already? Yeah, and the thing is, you know, Mercedes has, what they have really got going for them, they have a very good team, you know, just like Ferrari had in the Halcyon Michael Schumacher days. So if they have a hiccup, they can react very quickly. Okay, so that's very impressive. They have the resources, they have the means, they have the technology. You know, big corporation and tremendous history. And on top of that, they have one of the best drivers of all time. That if you give him a chance, he's going to get it on. Bang a gong every weekend. And that is very, very impressive. You know, when you have drivers and the top, this is the thing about these top level drivers. When they have a bad day, you still see them on the podium. And yeah. So I'm happy I have seen this. The talent we have seen in the years we've been following Formula One is absolutely mind-boggling. I remember, you know, Ayrton Senna came in Formula One in 1984 with Tolman. And I remember I went to a bookstore one day and I picked up a book. It was called Grand Prix Greats or Great Legends of Motor Racing. And I remember saying this to my friend. This was probably halfway through the 85 season. And Ayrton Senna's picture was on the front page, and there was quite a bit of write-up about him, what a talent he was. And, you know, when someday when people will look back, and especially people like you and I who had pleasure, utmost pleasure of watching these races on live TV, and when somebody will ask me about Lewis Hamilton, all I have to say is just watch his first season in Formula One and you will know how good this guy is. And if that cannot convince a person how good a rookie goes against a guy, hombre, who dethroned Michael Schumacher, you cannot convince those kind of people. But, you know, to each his own. And the other day, you know, you talk about him going another few years. He himself said this. I'm not putting words in his mouth. He said, they asked him the same question, how long will he go? And he said, right now, I'm the only person of my background. Okay. Reference to his color, of course, which, you know, it's a fact. And he said he will take that into account also. So, you know, when it comes to racing, I wish him and any good driver all the best. I always enjoy a great performance on a Grand Prix track. So, sir, we shall move on now. Lance Stroll and his teammate Sergio Perez put on a great performance and finished in the top 5. Perez was on a one-stop strategy. And if you recall Mr. Rogers, he was always very good on the tire management situation in his Sauber days. After missing 2 races due to contracting coronavirus, Checo was 4th at the finish but was given a 5-second time penalty for ignoring blue flag while His Majesty was passing him. Apparently, you cannot go more than, you have to move over after you pass a third blue flag station. I think he was guilty of that, but that's kind of sad. But a pretty impressive performance coming back from an illness as serious as coronavirus. Another guy who did a very impressive job in the race. Who? Sebastian Vettel. Positive day and finished 7th. How times have changed. Back in the Halcyon days with Red Bull, we were used to Christian Horner saying on the team radio, and I will never forget this, Sebastian Vettel! You are the world champion. Do you remember those days, sir?
Oh, yes. Oh, the memories.
thanks for the memory of sentimental verse, nothing in my purse, and chuckles when the preacher said, for better or for worse, how lovely it was.
Yes, sir. Now the same driver talks to his team like they are out to get him. I have a feeling maybe there is more to the story behind the scenes than just a phone call from Binotto saying bye-bye after 2020. With all his issues and self-induced spins, I would still like to see him get a win with Ferrari this season and go out on a high. Remember when Kimi won in the US Grand Prix? How everyone was excited? So I would like to see that happen. I remember, you know, in 75, Graham Hill, who was such a big name, he still carried on and he has his own team and he was running always at the back, and that was very, very disappointing and disheartening. So I don't want to see him driving for Haas or, I mean, struggling at the back all the time. Now, there are reports Checo's sponsors are trying to pay more pesos to Lance Stroll so that Hombre is not put on the sidelines to make room for Seb. How much money can you pay Lance Stroll to convince him? That's my question. I mean, if they go, tell Max, go to him and say, you know, I will give you $25 million. He's going to say, oh, that's Lance's pocket money for the month. What are you talking about? So we'll see. I think if Lawrence Stroll wants Seb, he will get there. But would you like to see Checo kicked out of Force Canada, if I may call that team that?
No. No, and nothing, the driver lineup at Aston Martin will stay the same. Vettel is not going to Aston Martin.
Okay, well, we'll find out in a few months. Next, we come to Alex Albon. In the early laps, he was running as high as sixth. I like his racecraft and his aggressive passing moves. In the end, he was eighth. The problem is, no matter what he does, he will be compared to his teammate. Same problem as Bottas. And when your teammate is second ahead of a Mercedes, then Dr. Marco will look for a faster prescription. The man he replaced, Pierre Gasly, was not the blue pill, so he was taken off the Red Bull shelf. I hope they give Albon another season in 2021. Red Bull has quite a few juniors in their program, but most are not F1 ready, nor do they have super license. Next we come to Pierre Gasly, stamped return to sender after Albon took his seat at Red Bull, is really thriving at AlphaTauri. He was ninth on Sunday. And the ever-giggling Mr. Lando Norris took the final championship point from his 10th place finish. And I am very interested in seeing Lando. Next year it will be his third year in Formula One, how he will stack up against Daniel Ricciardo. And that will be a make-or-break season for one of them. How do you think it will work out between Lando and Ricciardo?
Well, we'll see how the package is. It's all about the package. I think Ricciardo would love to be pushed a little bit by his teammate. Ricciardo needs a faster car right now. That's another person that could be a world champion, but once again, no package.
I think Daniel Ricciardo's chances of world championship are much less than Max Verstappen's, and his chances are not very good as long as Mercedes keeps going like this. And if Lewis, quite a few people will have a chance of becoming world champion if Lewis Hamilton retires. But I don't think that's happening in the next couple of years. You know, what will be very interesting, Mr. Rogers, the hybrid package we have now will carry on next season. So more of the same is expected. And then in 2022, somebody will get the package right. More right than others, I should say. And if that somebody is not Mercedes, then we will have regime change. But what can also happen, Lewis Hamilton may jump a seat also in 2022. I don't know. But if Mercedes keeps the same advantage with the rule changes in 2022, then your prophecy will come true that Lewis Hamilton may have 9 or 10 world championship and 140 Grand Prix wins. That will make Nando very proud. Is the caller there?
The caller is crying.
I can understand. I see the digital tears through the fiber optics. So sad. So, sir, let's take a look at the championship before we do our break. LCH leading, 132 points. Max second, 95. Bottas next, 89. Charles Leclerc is fourth with 45, while his teammate is 11th on 16 points. That's pretty sad. Top three in the Constructors' Championship, Mercedes, 221 points. Second, Red Bull, 135. Third, Racing Point, 63. Wow. Williams is the only non-scoring team. Final thoughts on the Grand Prix weekend, sir?
Very exciting. Can't wait for Spa. Hopefully, we'll get a podium for Ricciardo. See, I don't even ask for a win anymore because we know who's going to win. But, yeah, Spa. If we get rain in the Ardennes Forest, we could have a great Grand Prix in a couple weeks.
Do you know what the forecast is?
No. But, listen, things change. And I do a lot of Indian dancing over here. Anything is possible.
Yes. I'm disappointed that if there was a place where they wanted, they should have had two races, it was Spa and Monza. But there's only one at Spa.
That's because they don't like the Belgians.
But it's good. You know, Italy will have three races, Monza, Mugello, and Imola. Beautiful.
Yeah? What about France?
No Grand Prix in France. I'm sorry, sir. It's amazing how, you know, after the, 2 weeks we have Belgian Grand Prix, then we will be in September, come September, and Autodromo Nazionale di Monza. Beautiful. You know, they're talking about allowing 50,000 people at the Russian Grand Prix. That will be interesting.
That will be interesting. And then 2 weeks later, the spike in COVID will be even more interesting.
That's very true. Let's hope we have... Well, we have Formula One needs to have two more races, and then if anything goes wrong, we can have a completed world championship with a champion. So I'm happy about that.
Good for you, Nas. Keep up the good work. I think we should take a quick break because you have a big, fully loaded burrito on the MM. So why don't we hear from Gary Sloan?
Hello, listeners. My name's Gary Sloan, and this is this week's edition of In the Pit Lane. So, Lawrence Stroll, a man who rarely makes a public comment, stood in front of the camera at Silverstone and gave a performance that almost scared the living daylights out of the paddock. In a nutshell, the Canadian billionaire was not happy. In fact, he was seriously aggrieved and released what can be described as a war cry. Stroll declared during the weekend, "They're dragging our name through the mud, and I will not stand by nor accept this. I have never cheated at anything in my life. These accusations are completely unacceptable and not true. My integrity and that of the team are beyond question." So as the drama unfolds, social media and Formula One forums are awash with comments along the lines of the general thesis that you do not achieve billionaire status and retain your integrity. As a general assumption, there's probably a great deal of truth in the thesis. One Bernie Ecclestone comes to mind. So is it fair to tar Stroll with the same brush? While he does live the billionaire's lifestyle with homes in Geneva, London, Quebec and the Caribbean island of Mystique, among his toys are the $200 million 62-metre super yacht Faith and a collection of 25 vintage Ferraris. He also owns the Ferrari dealership of Quebec and the Canadian race circuit Mont Tremblant. Stroll made his $2.6 billion fortune through a series of investments in fashion brands, namely Pierre Cardin, Polo Ralph Lauren, Tommy Hilfiger, and the jewel in the crown, Michael Kors. Stroll and his longtime business partner, Hong Kong-based Silas Chow, eventually cashed in their 5.7% holding when Kors was valued at $15 billion back in 2014. Stroll and Chow have never been involved in any allegations of corruption, accounting scandals, or bribery, and there does not seem to be any skeletons in their cupboard. Well, they say a person can be judged by the company he or she keeps. Stroll purchased Force India and Aston Martin through his consortium U3 Investments, and it's fair to say that none of the business partners have been implicated or accused of any impropriety in their business dealings. So it looks like Stroll's comment, "My integrity and that of my team are beyond question," stands up to scrutiny. Also involved in the drama is, of course, the Mercedes team, with Toto Wolff telling the media he has zero worries about his team being involved in the case, and I felt assured his reputation won't be affected. Obviously, our reputation is very important, but it is intact. Well, Wolf, like Stroll, does not seem to have any skeletons in the cupboard, and he does come across as a decent guy. But his team is majority owned by Daimler, who have a completely different reputation. To illustrate the point, it's worth remembering that in 2010, Daimler's German and Russian subsidiaries each pleaded guilty to two counts of bribery charges brought by the US Justice Department and the US Securities and Exchange Commission. Daimler paid a whopping $185 million fine as a settlement. The investigation revealed that Daimler improperly paid some $56 million in bribes in at least 22 countries. Prosecutors said that Daimler engaged in a long-standing practice of paying bribes, due in part to a corporate culture that encouraged the practice. Then there's a small matter of the company being fined $870 million by German prosecutors in 2019 over the diesel emissions scandal. So maybe it's time for Toto to protect his integrity and buy out the wavering Daimler board, leaving him free to establish Team Wolf. Well, that's it for another week. More details at inthepitlane.com. Till next week, stay safe, stay well.
Gary, keep up the good work. And now, in the bullpen, we have Tim with Tech Talk, and I believe he's going to do a little explaining about the Pink Panther. Take it away, Tim.
Greetings, race fans. There's been some exciting action on track this year, and for better or for worse, plenty of off-track drama too. Racing Point has been penalized and fined for copying Mercedes' 2019 brake duct designs. Even though these look pretty similar from the outside, there is complex aero design that fits within the hub of the wheel, and the geometries inside the wheel were too similar to call this a coincidence. This negates Racing Point's claim that they used photographs last year to influence their designs this year. Appendix 6 of the Sporting Regulations provides rules for what are called listed parts. I'm paraphrasing heavily in what I'm about to say because Appendix 6 is 2 pages long, but essentially, listed parts must be designed either by a team itself or a third-party contractor which is not a competitor or is supplying parts to a competitor. What that means is that every team is using unique parts. Front and rear air ducts are listed parts. This rule prevents Mercedes or other teams from running 4 identical cars with different paint jobs. Mercedes is running 2 cars, and Racing Point is a separate team running 2 cars. Engines are not listed, and that allows Racing Point to buy Mercedes engines, just like Haas buys Ferrari engines, for example. Interestingly, Racing Point is being allowed to continue using the offending parts. Their actions broke the sporting regulations, but apparently not the technical regulations of F1. These parts are legal from a technical point of view. Racing Point isn't using parts that violate size constraints or pump coolants into the brakes or anything like that. Mercedes designed these parts and they were perfectly legal, but Racing Point made a sporting violation in using these parts. Now, you may disagree with the FIA decision to allow continued use of these parts, and many teams would agree with you. So this debate is likely to linger as appeals are made. But the damage to competitiveness isn't just that Racing Point got championship-winning brake duct designs without creating them for themselves. Copying these parts freed up Racing Point engineers to focus on other part designs and other test work, and that has given them an unfair advantage elsewhere, even if it doesn't manifest in large point hauls. But an argument for allowing Racing Point to keep their ducts is that, because of the fact that brake ducts are so critical in routing airflow over the car as a whole, any other design would have negative implications far beyond the brakes themselves. Sure, these ducts direct airflow into the brakes from outside the car for cooling, but these flows then pass over the car and interact with other aerodynamic surfaces. Drag, downforce, and stability are all affected by the brake ducts in a way. So forcing Racing Point to redesign their ducts, and therefore a lot of other aero work, before the next race might be too firm of a punishment. Again, you may disagree. There's some more gray area in that these brake ducts were not listed parts last year, so Mercedes may have provided technical details within the bounds of the regulations. So it'll be interesting to see how this situation continues to evolve. Even with a combined 194 pages of sporting and technical regulations, the FIA finds itself in a position where the proper response may not be cut and dry, and whatever message they send will serve as precedent for future years' cars. We have a saying in engineering that nature is cruel but fair. It may be difficult to create a racing car or a bridge or a rocket, But aerodynamics, structural mechanics, gravity, and friction don't have moods or make mistakes. But the FIA and Formula One teams are people, not physics equations. So we'll see what the legal minds at the FIA decide. Whew. Sometimes I'm glad to be an engineer.
Once again, Tim, you're the smartest man at the F1 Weekly Palatial Studios. Gracias. So why don't we take a quick break, and we'll come back after these brief messages.
Hi, I'm Giancarlo Fisichella, and you are listening F1 Weekly.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial, with the king, the Sultan himself, Nasser Hamid.
Thank you, sir. We shall start with supporting races for Formula 1, Formula 2. Top of the agenda, Callum Ilott on pole for feature race on Saturday. Man from Cambridge was on his way to victory when Giuliano Alesi brought out the safety car with about a dozen laps to go, and that gave new motivation to Yuki Tsunoda, who stayed out. And last 10 laps of this race, man, they were very, very exciting. I would call them Tombstone Arizona-style Wild West. Very, very exciting. Not so for Ilott, as he lost more and more places while battling to get to the front. The more he tried, the more it looked that he's going to pass this guy. Other drivers would gang up on him and he would lose a place or two. Yuki Tsunoda tried to keep his lead while slipping and sliding, but lost places in the closing laps to drivers on fresh rubber. Winner was his Japanese compadre Nobuharu Matsushita. Russian rocket and early leader Robert Schwartzman was second, with Chinese Guan Yu Zhu third. Tsunoda ended up fourth. And this is the kid who is part of Honda and Red Bull program that may be in Formula One at AlphaTauri, I think. Brazilian Felipe Drugovich won Sunday's sprint race. Mick Schumacher was third. Now we go to feeder series to F2, which would be F3. Third pole in a row for American Logan Sargeant from Boca Raton, Florida. Race was won by English driver Jake Hughes. Late in the race, Logan was under pressure from Kiwi Red Bull junior Liam Lawson. Logan was smart enough not to defend like K-Mag or Grosjean, because despite finishing third, Logan extended his lead in the championship, and that is the name of the game. However, in race 2, we had an Aussie 1-2 on Sunday. Oscar Piastri from Melbourne winning over Alex Pironi. Matteo Nannini, nephew of Alessandro Nannini, was third. Logan Sargeant was fifth. He still leads the championship, but now only by 1 point over Piastri. There are 6 races remaining, and Oscar Piastri last year won the Formula Renault Euro Cup, so by default, automatically, he's in their Renault driver development program. But it's very impressive. He is in his first year of Formula 3 and fighting with a championship that speaks very well. The Porsche Super Cup race was won by Dutchman Larry ten Forde. Man, now we come to MotoGP. Have you seen what happened there, Mr. Rogers?
I can't divulge anything that I've seen or touched.
Okay. They were at Red Bull Ring in Austria. All I can say is Valentino Rossi is a very, very lucky boy. There was a major crash between two riders, and the Yamaha of Franco Morbidelli went flying just over the head of the doctor. The bike raced towards Rossi and Vinales like a shoulder-fired rocket, and if you see this on YouTube, folks, you will not believe it. The bike got airborne after hitting the curbs and went just over Rossi. And you know, another rider, I think it was Maverick Vinales, was right behind Rossi, so both were extremely lucky. And you should see his reaction when Rossi returned to the pit. Very, very chilling. The race was red flag and then restarted. Now, Andrea Dovizioso went on to win over Joan Mir and Jack Miller, and Dovizio has been given the pink slip by Ducati. Next, we come to your ex-favorite driver, Alonso at Indy. He kissed the wall of voodoo last week, and on the other side of the pond, Cyril Abitbol said one machismo is driving for Renault. There will be no circles in the sand or brickyard.
The Memorial Day Classic, known as Greatest Spectacle in Racing, will be run next Sunday for the first time since 1987. Andretti name on pole in the form of Marco Andretti. I say watch out, I think Sato-san is also on the front row. Last chance saloon for Fernando Alonso, he will start 26, but this is a long race with many cautions. But if qualifying is any indication, then race should be won by a GP2 engine, and Sato-san has already screamed victory with that power. And so now we come to Historia de España. Spain has a very rich history in Grand Prix motor racing, going back almost a century, but to this day, Nando remains the only Spanish driver to win an F1 championship race, and also the F1 championship. Back in 1924, there was the San Sebastian Grand Prix near the French border. The race was won by famous English driver Henry Seagrave. One of the drivers who DNF was Alfiere Maserati, one of the Maserati brothers. Most of F1 Weekly familiar members will know the Montjuic Street Circuit located in a royal park in Barcelona. The Grand Prix of Peñarín was first held here in 1933 and was won by a driver from Chile, Juan Zanelli, in an Alfa Romeo. Tazio Nuvolari was fifth, but his Alfa Romeo was entered by another team, a team by the name Scuderia Ferrari. And this is what really gives me chills when I hear stuff like that. It was at Montjuic Park in the 1971 Spanish Grand Prix that Firestone introduced slick tires in Formula One based on their experience in American racing. Next we come to a place called Pedralbes. The first F1 Championship Grand Prix in Spain was held at this circuit near, I think it's in Barcelona or just outside Barcelona. Juan Manuel Fangio was the winner in his Alfa Romeo. There was also a track at Sitges. Paco Gordia was the first Spanish driver to race in Formula One. He made his debut in his home race in 1951. Now we come to my favorite part, famous F1 races in Spain. And I think I remember all of them very, very well. 1974, Jarama near Madrid. First win for Niki Lauda in his Ferrari. And I think he had to pit for tires. And BBC reported very proudly that his incredible Ferrari mechanics were able to change four tires in about like 42 or 43 seconds. Long way we have come since those days. 1978, Mr. Roger, I listened to this race on Spanish radio live in Espanol. Jarama, Mario Andretti becomes first and remains only American to win Spanish Grand Prix in his GPS Lotus. 1981, same track, Jarama, one of the great Grand Prix wins by Gilles Villeneuve and also of all time, his Ferrari truck holding off several faster cars lap after lap to score victory, which turned out to be his final F1 victory. 1986, a classic, the Tio Pepe special, when Senna pipped Mansell in one of the closest finishes in Grand Prix history. In typical Mansell luck, the start-finish line was moved forward shortly before start of the race, otherwise he would have won this epic battle, brought on, you guessed it, a late pit stop for tire change when Arnaich had a huge lead. I don't know if they have Pep Boys in England, but I wonder how he feels when he takes his family car for new tires and they say, "Good evening, Mr. Mansell. Shall we put on some new Goodyear? Now they have run flat technology." And how was Adelaide, by the way? Anyway, 1996, another great performance. Rain and shine for Michael Schumacher as he drowns the competition to win his first race in a red car. After this, decade of rainy nights in Georgia and all over man's world for rest of the field. Till we had the tornado from Oviedo in 2005. See, Siri Bob. 2012, a day that will live in infamy in Venezuela and all over the racing world. Pastor Crachado wins a Grand Prix for Williams over Nando and Kimi, and they lift him up on the podium. This is one of my all-time favorite motor racing photographs. Just such a unique Pastor Maldonado winning from Venezuela, and then Kimi and Nando lifting him up. Very, very cute. Another great win in Spain, this time by local hombre, 2012 Valencia. Muy macho hombre de España puts on a machismo performance to win from 11th on the grid in his Ferrari. This was a street circuit by the dock of the bay. Instead of million-dollar yachts like Monte Carlo, we had equally expensive cranes to brighten the scenery. Do you remember that, Mr. Rogers?
Yes, I saw nothing wrong with cranes.
Yes, they fly very high. Anyhow, 2016, Barcelona. Making his debut for Red Bull, Max Verstappen becomes the youngest F1 winner as a teenager. The Silver Arrows took each other out on the opening lap. A few of those this season may help the same driver become the youngest world champion. But cage rattling is missing from Mercedes. Bottas is finished. He's a nice guy, so he's not going to lead a palace reward. And now, finally, sir, we come to famous last words. And today come from MotoGP. I was watching this race, and it's coming from a MotoGP commentator. As I mentioned, race winner Dovizioso has been given the famous message, your services are no longer required after the 2020 season. And as he crossed the finish line in first place, one of the commentators said, must be like a slap with a wet fish on the face of Ducati management. Slap with a wet fish. That must be what you call stinko. And with that, we have to go. Thank you for listening. Stay safe. Be happy. Motor racing rules.
Keep up the good work, Nass. Outstanding. Tim, another check in the mail. Gary, keep up the good work. Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. So we do have Spa. Anything can happen at Spa if we have rain. So let's have some rain. Let's get Ricciardo and Renault on the podium. And for God's sakes, why don't we get the Pink Panther to develop their own brake ducts? Come on, it's not that hard. Hire a 12-year-old, give him a 3D printer, and it's done.
Oh, man. I got to tell you this, something I read just before the start of the podcasting. Do you remember this guy, Chavsky? He was interviewed, I did not read the whole story. He was interviewed on German sporting network Sport 1, and he's dishing out some dirt on Toto and Mercedes, claiming that he has some inside information that Mercedes provided Racing Point a wind tunnel scale model and a show car. And he also took some shot below the belt and questioned Toto Wolff's relationship with Lawrence Stroll, asking, why is he always on vacation on Stroll's board? And according to this story, and I don't know anything about it, apparently there was a big blowout between Toto and Chavsky in 2013 or 14. And there, as I'm sure you know, there is a new sheriff in town called Stuttgart, Mr. Ola Källenius, who is the new head of Daimler-Benz. He's from Sweden. And he may have his own agenda on how the F1, Mercedes F1 affair should be handled. So there may be some power play in the powerhouse that is Mercedes-AMG F1 team that the media or we may not be aware of right now. So stay tuned to F1 Weekly, please.
Outstanding, Nass. I knew there was something fishy going on over there, but nobody would listen to me. I also want to recommend a book, and I may have sent you a link. It's by Neil Bascom. It's called Faster. It's about the 20s. And 30s, the beginning of racing in Europe, France, Spain, Italy, Monza, the Nürburgring. It's exciting. It's Nuvolari, Caracciola. All the boys are there. And it's a great read about fantastic cars, fantastic drivers, and German dominance by, I am going to call him, Mr. H. It's a great read. Faster by Neil Bascom, Nass. I recommend it to all our listeners, and it's good to know the history of racing.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. You know, nothing like seeing pictures of street races from, you know, Pescara, Brescia, you know, it's just all these Spanish towns we talked about earlier. And it's, you know, there was a place in Germany called Solitude, but Dan Gurney won a race. I think it's somewhere near Stuttgart. That's very high on my dust bucket list to go there. And many other places. Shimei, I've never been. I was looking at the map of Shimei circuit. Pretty interesting in Belgium. You've been to Shimei, right?
Oh, absolutely. I love Shimei. I love Shimei cheese. I love Shimei ale. And I like the town of Shimei. Very friendly people. Go, go, go. And of course, right on the edge, on the outskirts, there's a racetrack. Shimei had Grand Prix racing in the streets in the 20s and 30s with the famous Bugattis, Delage, Delahaye, vintages, folks.
Yes, that's. I'm really interested in that place. And also this place in Angoulême in France. Fangio, I think, won a race there.
Angoulême, that's the race they have every year on what they call Les Remparts. It's fantastic. My brother's B&B in Bassineau is a half hour away from Angoulême. If you want to go to the race, you just go to Bassineau.com, mention my name, and you get a big discount and a free black and white picture of me.
Beautiful. And also this place, you know, where they used to do Grand Prix races, Antibes. Actually, I've been there and I've driven a little bit. Part of it was a street race, so not too difficult to do that. But it's very nice. And man, I'll tell you, Antibes, as you may know, is not very far from Nice. I drove from Nice to Marseille. What a beautiful drive.
Beautiful part of the country. Very dry and hot like this in the summer, like California. It's fantastic. A lot of nice rock formation. The Mediterranean is sky blue. It's fantastico.
Yes, the rock formation did get my attention. Very nice. Gotta go someplace. We need this virus to be totally gone soon so we can make something happen in motor racing.
Keep up the good work, Nass. We're going to see everybody at Spa. So get some rest, everybody, because Spa is exhausting. You're going to love every minute of it. I want to thank everybody who listens. I'll see you at the hot dog stand.
Thank you. Bye-bye.